Welcome to the Trigator Podcast, where budgets are balanced, debt gets destroyed, and alligator expenses get fed before they bite. I am your host, Nate Tanner. The Trigator Podcast is sponsored by Trigator. Go to Trigator.com and sign up for the free trial of the Trigator app to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Trigator, you can enjoy life more, worry about money less. So there's a lot of myths out there around budgeting, and I want to take some time today to kind of dispel some of those myths and then also talk about some of the truths around budgeting. I have a number of myths that we're going to talk about, but let's start out with our first myth. Myth number one is that budgeting is time consuming. And this is something that I've heard a lot, that it takes just way too much time to budget, and so why bother? And initially, it does take up a little bit of time when you're first setting things up, but as you work through your budget and you fine tune it and you get it to where a point where you're really comfortable with it, then you don't really, doesn't take that much time. It's a matter of just checking it as you're, to make sure that you're sticking to it. Taking that initial step to get it set up is probably the most important thing that you can do in terms of your personal finances than even going to your job, frankly, because it's going to set you up for success. And as you plan your budget and you set things right, you're going to be able to have total control over your money. The next myth, myth number two that I want to talk about, is that making a budget is too much effort. This is a myth because once your budget is up and running, it's easy to automate the majority of it, especially if you're setting up things like automatic payments through your different bill pay accounts and such. If it's automatic, then you don't need to worry about it. It's just happening. Things are coming out. Things are getting paid. Things are happening the way they're supposed to. And that's how I have things set up for me, is that I don't even think about it because things are just, they automatically come out. I have them set up. So when I have my budget set and the expenses are automatically coming out. You can also set up an automatic draft to go into savings for you so that you're making sure that you're saving like you should. And all of these things are just automatic, and so it's not that much effort once you get things up and running. It's that initial setup that does take some effort, but once you're up and running and you automate it, then you have smooth sailing going forward. Myth number three is that making a budget is complicated. And really, that's not correct either, because it's only as complicated as you make it. I mean, if you think about what a budget really is, it gets down to as simple as it's your income minus your expenses and savings, and it equals zero. That's all that it is a matter of planning where every dollar that comes in goes and making sure that it has a name and that it has a place to go. Myth number four is one that really bothers me. of all the budgeting myths out there, number four is one that really bugs me. And our number four myth is that unexpected expenses blow my budget all the time, so why bother? And this one, the reason it bugs me is because how many unexpected expenses really are there? I mean, let's talk about these a little bit, because people will say, oh, well, my car broke down. Is that really an unexpected expense, though? Because if you own a car, chances are it's going to break down. At some point, you're going to have to repair something in your car. That's just life. That's what's going to happen. So why not plan for it? Why not plan some car maintenance into your budget so that when it does break down, it's not a surprise? You know, we have these other things that are supposed unexpected expenses, like your car registration. You know, that happens every year. Every year you're going to have to register your car. So it's not really an unexpected expense. It's something that you just need to plan for. Now, I know there are some that are truly unexpected expenses. Like, for example, if you live out of state and you have a family member that is sick that you need to go visit suddenly, yeah, that's an unexpected expense. And that's what emergency funds are for. And so you want to make sure that you have a good emergency fund set up so that you can meet those truly unexpected expenses. But I think that most of the expenses that we run across in our budgets are expected. We just need to plan for them. I mean, going back to the car, if you drive a car, chances are you're going to get a flat tire sometime. It's going to happen. It's not something that's unexpected. Because it may feel like it's unexpected because you're not driving around thinking, I'm going to get a flat tire today. But chances are at some point while you're driving, you're going to get a flat tire. So again, let's plan for that. Let's put some car maintenance and some tire money away so that we can plan for that unexpected expense. it's like what a lot of people do in commercial real estate, where we talked about sinking funds. The sinking fund is money that you set aside for a big expense that's coming up. And you take a little bit of money from each, what they do in commercial real estate is they take a little bit of money from their rents and put it away into a sinking fund so that they can replace the roof, because the roof is going to need replacing. The water heater is going to need replacing. So they put that into a sinking fund. And they have all of these different funds that they put away for, so that when something goes out in the property, they're ready for it and they can pay for it. And that's how we want to run our budgets, is we want to eliminate these unexpected expenses by making them expected. And the easiest way that you can identify these is by going through the deep dive that we've talked about before, where you take and you go pull from your bank online a spreadsheet file of all of your spending for the last, as far as will let you go back. Some will let you go as far back as 3 years. And pull that 3 years worth of spending and look at it and really analyze it. You can sort it by where the money goes, sort it by who you're paying, and look at it and say, okay, where are my unexpected expenses? What is it that is something that I regularly spend that maybe I think is unexpected? You know, we have things like holidays that come up, and yet we feel like those are unexpected expenses, and they're not. They are things that you can totally plan for if you just take the time to do it. So this one about unexpected expenses blowing the budget really bugs me, because there are very few things that are truly unexpected expenses. And we can plan for most expenses that hit our budgets, and we really should plan for most of them. Okay, let's go on to myth number 5 now that I've had a moment on the soapbox for number 4. But let's move on to number 5. Number 5 is another one that kind of irks me, because what myth number 5 says is that budgets are restrictive. And that's a total myth. Budgets are not restrictive. Budgets, all a budget is, really, is telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And that's a quote from John Maxwell. Again, a budget is telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And with budgets saying that they're restrictive, it's not true, because really you are the one that picks where you spend your money. Okay? And the budget is something that you create. This myth has come up because people have been grown up and their parents saying it's not in the budget, it's not in the budget, and so they feel like they're being beat over the head with the budget. While it's true that there may be things that aren't in your budget, you're the one that gets to decide what goes into your budget. I have a friend that he absolutely loves socks, and I call him the guy with the snazzy socks. And he loves socks so much that and these are not just the simple Walmart pair of socks that you get, the plain white that, you know, for 12 pack for $12. He gets the most crazy socks that have toe holes and that are multicolored in every shape you can imagine. And he loves his socks. And if I told him in a budget that he can't have any room for sock money, then of course he's going to say that it's too restrictive. Now, that doesn't mean he can go hog wild and blow all his money on socks, but he puts into his budget an appropriate amount for socks. And that's totally okay. There's nothing wrong with that. He gets to choose where his money goes. And what your budget needs to do is match what your financial plans are. And as we've been talking about before, where you are in your financial house depends on where your financial goals are going to be set and where you're going to put your money. And sometimes we're in a place in our financial house where we need to tighten our belt and we need to be careful what we're spending. And so we have to cut things like our sock budget down so that we can meet our financial goals. And then once we meet those goals, then we can bump that sock budget back up and really enjoy the socks. Okay? So budgets are not restrictive and they're not permanent. Well, just because something isn't in your budget today doesn't mean that it's not going to be in the future. As you're building that financial house and you're moving through those different levels of your house, you're going to find that you're going to be opening up money that you can then use for those things that you really want. So it's not a permanent restriction that you're putting on yourself. It's a matter of just being aware of what you're doing and being able to achieve your financial goals. And the question is, what's more important, your snazzy socks or your financial goal? And sometimes it may seem like the socks are more important, but we need to look and say, okay, how much are the socks important in terms of my financial goal? Can I put the socks on hold for a little bit or reduce my sock budget so that I can meet that financial goal? Anyway, budgets, as far as being restrictive, they're only as restrictive as you make them. And there may be times when they may feel restrictive because you're trying to meet a financial goal. But once you reach that goal, then you're able to loosen the belt a little bit and be able to do some more fun things that you really want to do. Okay, myth number 6. This one is that budgets don't work. And I can tell you, budgets do work. You just need to put some planning behind them. You need to go through that initial setup that we've talked about where you're really, really honing in on your spending. Because you've really got to know where you are today and where your spending is today and build that into your budget. Otherwise, it's going to feel like it doesn't work. Because if you have a current habit of eating out and you're spending $1,000 a month eating out and you expect to go to zero, that's not going to work because you're not in that habit yet. But you can reduce that down and say, okay, instead of $1,000, I want to only spend $200 this month. And when you get into a habit of $200 a month, then you can say, okay, I want to reduce that even more to $100. And then you can reduce it even more and say, I'm going to go out to eat just once a month or something like that. It's all up to you. That's another thing we just talked about, is that it's up to you how you want to do things in your budget. But budgets do work because you're the one that designs it. Okay. And as long as you take that initial time up front to really make it make sense, then it will work for you. Now, what I found is that it takes about 90 days to get your budget squared away. It takes about 90 days of trial and error before your budget actually works the way that you want it to. And then once you get through that 90-day hurdle, you kind of find your stride and you're able to budget and do things the way that you really want to. So budgets do work. You just need to give it time and you need to be willing to make some adjustments. Okay. Just because 1 month something doesn't go the way that you expect it to doesn't mean a budget doesn't work. It just means you need to make an adjustment. Myth number 7 is that I don't need a budget. This one also irks me because really everyone needs a budget. Okay. If you make money and you have income, then you need to budget that out. You need to tell that money where to go instead of wondering where it went. Like we've said before. The last myth that I want to dispel is one that is less common, but when I heard this one, it really stuck out to me because they said that budgeting feels like you're living on leftovers, and there's nothing that could be further from the truth. We all are adults and we have things that we need to pay for, okay? We need to pay for our rent, we need to pay for our phones, we need to pay for our utilities, all of these things that we need to pay for. And we're not taking the money that's left over and living on that. We're setting a plan for all of our money and where we want it to go. We're not living on leftovers. We're living by a plan. That's what we're doing, is we're planning exactly what we want to do. In fact, I don't even call mine a budget anymore. I call it a spending plan, because spending plans don't have that budget of that negative connotation that budget sometimes has. Because if I have just a plan and how I'm going to spend my money, then that's something that I get to control and I have full reign over how I want to do that. Let's talk about just a couple of the truths about budgeting, because we've kind of hinted at this first one, is that all budgeting is spending money intentionally. You're setting a plan in place on what you want to do. Okay. And we've talked about the second truth also, is that you get to pick where you spend the money. That's up to you. You're the one who's setting the budget. You're the one that says, I can afford to put this much towards my snazzy socks, and you get to pick it. Okay. The last truth, and one of the most important, is that people who are good with money use budgets. Anyone that is good with money has a budget that they follow, and they have a plan for every dollar that they're putting out. Okay. Think of it this way. Your money is like your employees and you're the boss. Okay. And you need to tell your employees what work they're supposed to do. Okay, some of that money, its job and its work is going to be to pay your mortgage or your rent. Some of that money is going to be towards your utilities, and that's going to be their job. Other bits of your money are going to have a job to be investments and to grow and to bring back more money towards you. Okay, so let's start being the boss and telling your money what to do instead of wondering where it went. Okay, let's get to our questions. Our first question comes from Michael. Michael says, should I get a fixed or variable rate mortgage in 2022? Let's talk a little bit about what each of these is, because what a variable rate mortgage is it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a mortgage rate that will change over time. And usually these have a ceiling and a floor, is what it's called, the lowest rate that it can go and the highest rate that it can go. And these are based on an index. For example, one of the common indexes out there is the Wall Street Journal LIBOR index. Okay. And what it's going to do is you're going to usually have a number of points plus the index. And whatever that index is and wherever it goes is where your rate is going to be and what it's going to be for you for a period of time. And usually what variable mortgage rates do is they start really low, and they're low for about 5 years. And the first 5 years of your mortgage, they're really, really low. And then year six is when the first time that it adjusts, and it can go up to the ceiling, which is the highest amount that it can be. And depending on what the economy is doing and what things are happening, that interest rate could go up or it could go down. But usually it goes up. Usually the introductory rate is much lower than anything you're going to see later down the line. So what happens when your mortgage rate goes up is your payment goes up. So really, a variable mortgage is a very risky thing to get into because you don't know what rates are going to do. For example, right now they're talking about, the Fed is talking about raising rates 75 percent. And if that happens, people who have an adjustable rate mortgage, they're going to see a big increase in their mortgage payments. And that could cause you to run into financial trouble. Now, a fixed mortgage is one that stays the same for the entire life of your loan. Meaning when you sign the paperwork, whatever the rate is, it's going to be that on your first payment and your last payment, however many years later. So the question on whether you should get a fixed or a variable rate mortgage depends on your risk level, really. But what I would recommend is sticking with a fixed rate because you don't know what rates are going to do. You can always refinance and get a lower rate, but if you're on a variable rate mortgage, you're gonna run into some possible trouble with rates go up. So if rates go down with a fixed rate, you can refinance, but if they go up with a variable rate, then you're in trouble. So stick towards that fixed rate, Michael. That's probably the safest bet for you and the better way to go. Our next question is from Neil. He says, is it worth financing a property and then renting it out? Absolutely. That's a great investment. That's a great way to make passive income that we've talked about before. And there's more to it than just a matter of getting financing and renting it out. You do have to run the numbers on it to make sure that it does have positive cash flow and to make sure that you're meeting all of your expenses. And also, depending on the what you're planning on doing with the property, if you're looking to purchase just a straight out investment property, then you're going to need to come up with about 20% down just to start. If you're looking to live in the property and then move and rent it, then that's another story. But there's a lot of things that you want to look into as you're getting into real estate investing. But I do, I really like real estate investment, and I like that it can produce you cash flow and that passive income. So yes, it's very much worth it. Question three comes from Rainey. Rainey asks, how do you save thousands off your home loan? This is really simple, really. If you have a mortgage, it works off of a schedule, okay? And that schedule is based on anywhere from a 15-year to a 30-year amortization, okay? And let's say that you have a 30-year mortgage and you have 360 payments, okay? Each of your payments is going to be the same, and it's going to take a certain amount of principal and interest each payment. And we know this is basic finance. The way that you save thousands is by paying early, okay? Because the more you can pay up each time, if you pay more on top of your normal, on top of your minimum payment, then you're going to be paying more towards the principal, which is going to take your interest bill down, and you'll end up paying off your home sooner. One of the tricks that I really like is that if you're paid every other week, so you get 26 paychecks a year, if you pay your mortgage half with every paycheck, then you're going to end up making an extra mortgage payment every year. So if your mortgage payment is $1,500, and you would pay half of that, which is $750 out of each paycheck, then each year you'll pay an extra $1,500 because it's, which is like an extra mortgage payment, which can reduce drastically the number of years and the interest that you end up paying. So great question, Rainey. Put some extra money on that house and you'll see that you'll be able to save thousands off your home loan. If you'd like to submit a question to the Tregator podcast, you can email us at podcast@tregator.com. You can post your questions to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Tregator, or visit our website, Tregator.com/podcast, and you can submit questions there. Be sure that you like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Our Instagram and Twitter is @Tregator. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Tregator podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Tregator. Go to Tregator.com and sign up for your free trial of the Tregator app to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Tregator, you can enjoy life more, worry about money less. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.